speaking today to Councilmember Ed Gonzalez, who is running for re-election to his second full term in District H. Councilmember is also my council member, even after redistricting. So let me start by asking, you know, you've now had a full term under your belt. How do things feel different to you now than they did when you first took office?
Well, I tell you that I still look forward to going to work each and every day. I'm still just as passionate about serving as I did when I first took the task of running for the seat. And it's been quite an eye-opening experience. I mean, the amount of items that come through our desk, the amount of volume, the issues are endless. Not only issues now, but issues coming down the road that we need to be proactive in dealing with. Sometimes, you know, something may not have already elevated to the point where it's an issue, but long-term we need to be identifying some of these things. So there's just an endless amount of work that takes place. So it's been going well, and I'm very glad to be wrapping up my first term and look forward to a second one.
You were elected to the position of Mayor Pro Tem as well last year. What exactly does Mayor Pro Tem do?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. Primarily, you know, it's kind of a second to the mayor, if you will, where sometimes the mayor has to step out of council chambers, or on the occasion that the mayor's away on city business, for example, then we or I convene the city council meetings, or sometimes represent her at various community events as well, and also look at the agenda items as well, just prior to them hitting council as well.
Okay. Obviously, council and the mayor have been busy these last 2 years dealing with budget issues. In the last budget, you know, cut $100 million out, laid off some 747 people. Obviously, going forward, everyone is hoping that revenues will rebound. But, you know, let's ask, at what point do you say we can't cut anymore? Whatever level of revenue we've got to find to make more because there's no more room to cut. At what point does that happen?
Well, I think that just to recap a little bit, I think it's always difficult to lay anyone off, and obviously that's something that no one looked forward to. I think we were anticipating to lose even more employees, so we were able to cut down on some of that potential loss drain from the city. So we weathered that storm a little bit. But I think that, you know, at some point we've got to be open and consider everything and have discussions about everything, even taxes. I think we've got to be open and have that dialogue because we have, you know, sometimes we're dealt a hand that sometimes our economy, our local economy, is not only linked to just our own region, but sometimes globally, what the global market's doing and how that's acting, and the bond ratings and different things that impact, you know, financial things. And then also, over time, just things that the city is now doing that are more costly, you know, and if the community still wants to continue to have that level of service, then I think we need to be open about talking about everything. I think it starts with a frank discussion internally. I think we all have to look at our own house and look at what we're doing, how we're spending our money, making sure we're being good stewards of the taxpayers' money. And I believe we're going through that exercise. We've looked to consolidate our fleet department. That's still a work in progress. We're looking at some consolidation in our HR department. We're looking at more aggressive collection of practices that in the past we did not. So a lot of it is just how do we first take care of things that we may have some direct control over in terms of how we manage operations. And then then, you know, at some point then be able to say, look, this is where we're at. This is the reality of our finances. And if we want to maintain or upgrade services down the road, then I think that's something that we need to be able to talk about.
If revenues do rebound, do you foresee trying to restore some of the things that have been cut, either restoring positions or things like, you know, library hours, having pools open, things like that? Do you foresee that as where the city wants to go if revenues will allow it?
I think that with the intent of us looking at some consolidations, I think thing is not so much to downsize what we're doing, but to right-size what we're doing. And that is to say, what is each department doing? Is it working to its optimum? Are we still meeting community needs? Are we still connecting the dots with some of the city services? For example, we are in the process of launching a new Department of Neighborhoods that is looking to do just that, of connecting some of the city resources with some of the activity in the communities in terms of how we better work with communities. Many times we have liaisons, different layers of liaisons in different departments. Maybe now we could close some of the silos that we operate under and work more effectively in the communities. So it might be that just in time some departments will be right-sized just to the right number, but others need additional growth. For example, with the libraries, we had really diminished some of the hours. We've tried to increase that back to some of the things that the community were asking for, so that's an important piece. But, you know, the funny thing about city government, it seems that everything we do seems to be a critical service or a core service, if you will, to somebody. And that's something where we need to, it's not always just the automatic to say, well, let's go back to the numbers we had before, but it's also, are the numbers that we had before required to lead an effective, efficient operation? Or maybe there's a new need in the community that we need to be addressing, that perhaps we could allocate more service to that.
Speaking of neighborhoods, some of the neighborhoods in your district were affected by the recent ordinance on historic preservation. You know, some people are very happy with it, some people are not so happy with it. Give me your take on how that all went, and whether are you satisfied with the outcome, and what else is there to do with that?
I'm satisfied with the outcome in the sense that I think that historic preservation is important. If you look at the large picture, it's a very small number of the entire city that we're dealing with, maybe 1% of the housing stock. I understand it's still important to each homeowner, every neighborhood, but I think it's important, especially in many of our neighborhoods, especially some of the older ones, to create that community stability, some semblance of building to scale, maintaining some of that. If not, all of our history will be erased before our eyes. We've lost a lot of that over the years. So I think it brings predictability to the process when you've had neighborhoods that are now coming in transition to know that when they build a home or they live in a current home that they will not be dwarfed by something much bigger, you know, just that dwarfs their property. And so I think these are things that are good things. I understand and I heard many of the concerns on both sides about the process and the delays and the timing and you know, so I'm sensitive to that. I understand how the community has felt frustrated about it, and you know, I think for the most part a lot of people are glad that it's over one way or another. Some people, like you said, are happy, others are not, but we now have some more protected historic districts.
I think the other contentious neighborhood issue that in your district, which I believe will now be somebody else's problem after redistricting, is of course the Walmart and in the Washington Heights area. I think from the perspective of the people who made the most noise about this, their concerns are, one, that this is just a bad place to build a Walmart, and two, they're especially upset about the use of the 380 agreement, which they believe gave the developer a lot of money to do stuff he was already going to do. Can you address some of this?
Sure. Well, I voted against the 380. One of the things that I try to do early on was to facilitate community discussions. Many times in policy or a project that's proposed, it might appear good at first, and then once you get more input, it might seem that maybe it's not the best fit for a community. And, you know, I did my best to really bring the sites together many times to try to create and foster dialogue between parties, especially early on, to give the developer an opportunity, for example, to hear from community leaders, encouraging them to go out, and also to encourage the community to talk to them and to give input as to what things they wanted. Ultimately, in a city without zoning, in a city where, you know, there's situations where a property owner obviously is going to be able to build a development on their property, and we cannot retroactively go back and change policies or ordinances just to fit, if you will. So in this situation, it was something where this property owner was proposing a development, regardless of who the retailer may be coming in, and they have a right to do that. Now, we also wanted something that would be built to the scale of the community. It's a changing community, and wanted to look for a different type of development, more of a new urbanism type of outlook on this, if possible, trying to create something that I think is very important, to create more walkability, just different features that could be incorporated into it. So it was a process that went on pretty long, and then the 380s can be good tools. I think that they help improve some infrastructure in areas where needed, but one of my concerns was that there were new Walmarts springing up pretty close to that one as well, and perhaps we should look at 380s in areas that truly need economic development and job creation. But it was obviously a very contentious issue. It's something that's still being worked on, in the sense that there's concerns about the bridge and things that need to be worked out. We've reached out to Public Works. We've submitted concerns. We've inquired about the long-term viability of the bridge, especially with additional traffic coming on. And then TxDOT obviously has a role as well in terms of the feeder roads that are being created that preceded this particular project. But it's been quite an issue, a lot of big pieces to it.
Okay. Other issues that have been going on in the city that have kind of dominated the news lately include the Renew Houston proposition, now known as Rebuild Houston. What's your assessment of where it stands right now? And, you know, what is your view of how it has gone so far in terms of setting up the fee structure and all the related issues that have been in the news?
Sure. Well, I think any time, and I think everyone agrees in principle, that we should improve our infrastructure. We do have some aging infrastructure out there. We have some. We've been a very car-centric city, so I think it's important to deal with the wear and tear of our roads. We could drive a number of, especially my district streets, and see a lot of streets that clearly need improvement and have potholes and really put a lot of wear and tear on our own personal vehicles, yet alone dealing with the bigger issues of flooding and drainage and all of that. So I think that we all understand the importance of that. I think that this potentially is a game changer because it allows a path forward to deal with our infrastructure needs, not only now, but for the long term as well, and make the city an attractive place that hopefully businesses want to come, because they feel that once they invest in the city, that people will be able to get to their jobs, from their jobs to their employment centers. We know that we're a low-lying area, and so we know that there's a prevalence for flooding, but if we can help mitigate some of that through improved flooding and drainage and better built roadways, I think that's a positive thing. I think it's important at this juncture that we create an effective program that people could see tangible results going forward, that they see that this will not be a political football, but a very pragmatic program that hopefully will address infrastructure needs. Our CIP funding, for example, was not fully funded in the out years. Now it will be, as we transition those projects and become a more data-based type of system, where now we will be able to look at hard data, hard numbers, look at where the streets with the greatest needs are, the biggest infrastructure needs. Hopefully all that can be looked at, so where we're making good decisions on investing those dollars, where we could go to pay-as-you-go, which will be a more fiscally responsible way of doing things, where a lot of our money isn't tied up into debt service. So I think we get more bang for our buck. So I think these are really important. You know, we also have neighborhoods that have never truly seen significant infrastructure improvements. Hopefully we could start addressing some of those needs in some of the areas of greatest needs. So, I think all of those things are significant. Obviously, there's been hiccups along the way as well, in terms of how some of the things that were rolled out with the fee structure, a lot of things. There was a lot of politics tied to it as well. It's a very divisive issue as well. Some people are very much for it. Others see it strictly as another tax, and so we had to work through a lot of those issues. And clearly, I think in hindsight, it would have been better to have just the right numbers and maybe roll that out a lot better. But I think we've done the best we could under the circumstances. When you're dealing with something of that magnitude, that really I can't think of any other city anywhere in the country that's addressing it like we are at this given time. And we're not the only city in the state that has a drainage fee in place, by the way. I think that overall that we're in the right place, and we just need to make sure that we're going to make very good use of that dedicated funding and really, really help improve our infrastructure for the coming generations.
Did you agree with the decision to exempt the schools and churches from the fee?
Initially, my thought was not to. That was my thought going in, but listening to a lot of discussion, stakeholders, I understood, in particular with the schools, because I understand that they collect taxpayer funding as well, and so I felt that it would be much easier for the city to go ahead and collect that money, offer that exemption, and then just be able to deal with it that way. And then with the churches as well, I saw firsthand, I wasn't on council at the time, but really saw how the church-based community really stepped up in that effort, for example, and provided a lot of needed services that, frankly, the city could not provide in terms of outreach, in terms of a lot of social service support that churches offer in a variety of ways that I felt that many times that they give above and beyond also in helping fill gaps that sometimes the reality is we cannot as a city government. And so I understood the logic in that as well. It's difficult because as you start creating exemptions, it creates sometimes a bigger burden on others, but I think we worked out the formula in a way that hopefully is fair to everyone across the city.
Okay. Red light cameras. Do you support the mayor's decision to turn them back on?
I do support the mayor's decision. We had received counsel when we voted to allow it back on the ballot. And at the time, even though there was some discussion that perhaps it wasn't the correct thing to do, but wanted to move forward and at least allow that opportunity. And perhaps in hindsight, we should have dealt with it at that time instead of delaying it to now. But obviously a judge has ruled that was invalid. So I think we need to then, if that was our logic for bringing them down, then it removes that situation off the table, because now we are opening up ourselves, I think, to some financial exposure to ATS because of the reason that we used to remove the cameras to begin with, which was because it was based on a vote. That vote's now been ruled invalid. So I think at this point in time, I understand the mayor's decision and respect it in terms of having to put the cameras up at this point as we continue to work through it. So it's something that we got to deal with in phases as these issues come up to the table. We've got to be dealing with them.
Should the city work towards a settlement with ATS that would stop the use of the cameras, or should the city just stick to the contract till the end?
I think that we should be able to, and I don't know what other legal maneuvers or options are still available at this point in terms of any further appeals or anything like that. I don't know where that stands. But I think that we should at least consider all options, and obviously it's tough to let the cat out of the bag, and once the community has voted, and we have to also keep that in mind and be respectful of that. And there was a majority vote that said we want the cameras down, and I think we need to be mindful of that constituency and not ignore that. So as a policy decision, I think that needs to weigh in our decision. If what would what would the option look like if we were to work out some type of settlement going forward? Perhaps not immediately, but maybe we could come up with something before the expiration of the contract to say maybe in between now and then we could, as the cameras remain up, at the same time simultaneously work out some type of settlement agreement so maybe the cameras could come down sooner than the expiration date. But I don't know what the options are available at this time.
Okay. Were you satisfied with the process the city used to redraw and the council districts and include two new districts?
I was satisfied. Everybody thought there was going to be just a dogfight and it was just going to be really nasty, and I think we really avoided a lot of that. I think it was a very methodical process that the mayor and the city attorney and our demographer laid out in doing it with all the neighborhood meetings that, you know, are required to do community outreach, working with some of the university partners as well, and getting some support from the academic community. And then the mayor obviously also being very open to dialogue on this. There was some opposition when the initial administration map came out, and I think that they worked through some of those concerns. And, you know, it's a very – there's no perfect process, I think, in redistricting. I've heard some of the past battles, and I don't think anybody ever agrees on a map in the end. I think that there's always room that somebody would want to change it a little bit different if they could in a perfect world. But I think when you're dealing with a number of constituencies and a lot of criteria that's been laid out historically, then I think that it makes it a complex process. And I think that one of the things that focused on a lot was trying not to split a lot of communities. Some where they could reunite, they did. Others, the Heights, for example, it's such a large amount of people in that general area now that it's very difficult to include that in an existing district, if you will, without kind of using those pieces to create a new one, simply because the size of it. There's probably close to 50,000 people in the greater Heights area. So at some point, if you were going to cut, some of it was going to be probably lost. So obviously, it's not all intact, but a greater part of the Heights, for example, did remain intact. We know that there was still some concerns about splitting the super neighborhood structure, if you will, that's really thriving and doing well. But again, this process is never perfect, but I was happy with the outcome and glad that the mayor had an openness to deal with it. And I think truly that's why the process worked out as nicely, I think, as it did. So
one of the goals that many people had was to increase the number of seats that could be won by a Latino on city council. There were different maps proposed to do that. There was one that was more geared towards kind of a Spring Branch area. What was actually gone with was more of a Southwest district. Do you believe that the map as it is drawn will in fact increase Latino representation on city council?
I think it will. I think there's a very good possibility. I think that the thing about it is that while it never guarantees that a Latino, for example, will be elected, at least it gives communities an opportunity to elect a representative of their choice, especially in a marginalized election, if you will. So I think that it at least creates the opportunity. And then it's up to the community, obviously, to decide on the best candidate for their community. But I think it does, you know, the Latino community has grown tremendously. A lot of the growth in our city is a result of that growth, and I think that you know, the city's changing. It's a growing. We're a very international city, not only in the Latino community, but we see a growing Asian American community that's really thriving, and you know, and that's something that I think we will begin to see in the coming years as communities just change and are evolving and at a more mature voting base, especially in the Latino community as it emerges. And there's work that needs to be done within the communities as well to really, you know, that vote needs to grow and become a mature vote in the community. It's a young voting age population, but it needs to start taking the responsibility of voting. So I think that there's some community responsibility as well to make sure that that vote is not just a vote in name only, but is actually utilizing the power of the ballot.
You were briefly a councilman while Mayor Bill White was in office. How would you compare Mayor White to Mayor Parker?
Well, yeah, it was, I think, only 6 months. He was already primarily on his way out, transitioning out already in the final months. I have a lot of respect for Mayor White. I saw him being very, you know, business-oriented, very practical, very just saw him just being a good leader. I admired him, and in the short time that I worked with him. Obviously, working with Mayor Parker, I've had the honor of working very closely with her during my first term, and I have the utmost respect for her. She works extremely hard. She truly has the best wishes of the city. I understand the complexity of the decisions that she has to make, and I understand how difficult they are. It's not always, you know, we might see it from the outside sometimes and not be privy maybe to every aspect of an issue, but I think she's worked very hard at trying to work through that as much as possible, and I found her very open to talking to me and others about issues whenever we've had an interest in dealing with something, in particular in our community. She's always been very open to letting us take the lead on projects or ideas that we might want to expand. So I think she's been a very good and strong leader, and has managed in one of the worst economies in recent history, at least in terms of all the challenges that we've been dealing with. Houston was not going to be immune to the national recession. Fortunately, we did not have the housing bubble that other cities had, and so I think we fared much better than others, but nonetheless, we were still going to feel some of that. And so I think she's done a great job in her first term, and I've really enjoyed working with her.
Okay. And when people go to vote this November, why should they vote to give you a second full term on office?
Well, I want them to know that I work very hard. I work very hard to be accessible. We try to be a good source of information, whether it's during an ice storm or whether it's just keeping constituents informed on a variety of issues. I work hard to meet with constituents on a regular basis, either through my coffee with a councilman, meetings that I have out in the community where I just meet with residents and hear what's going on, hear their thoughts, get their input. We are working hard to beautify our district. We've planted, you know, hundreds of trees throughout the district. We've collaborated on two electronic recycling events to remove tons of just electronic waste that could be recycled. We are working on a lot of public safety issues that I think are very important in our city. For example, the city of Houston, we arrest 19,000 people a year for public intoxication. And not while they're driving or anything, just simply being intoxicated. And one of the things that we're looking at, or that I'm working on very hard, one of my pet projects is the creation of a detox center, sobriety center, where we could create an access point where instead of just incarcerating someone for this low-level, nonviolent offense, we could instead divert them to a place where basically they can sleep it off. It could be an access point. The city saves money, and it could be a way to improve the quality of life for these individuals and hopefully put them on a track where they do not continue to just cycle through a system that's ineffective and we can no longer afford. So that's something that I'm very excited, and we're making tremendous progress, and something that, again, my public safety experience lends itself to that type of project. It makes good fiscal sense, and want the community just to know that I'm working hard, and now with a full term under my belt, I think even more experience, and just want to continue to serve.
Councilmember Ed Gonzalez, thank you very much for talking to me today.